The America First Committee, whose slogan, Defend America First, symbolizes your national safety, is a nonpartisan organization that supports and urges the election of candidates for public office, either Democrat or Republican, who are prepared to advocate the policies and principles of the America First Committee as publicly set forth and as further detailed in this presentation. The America First Committee dedicates itself to you and those dear to you for your first and everlasting interest, a sane and sound defense for America. Let freedom ring. The America First Committee, whose slogan, Defend America First, is your assurance of peace, brings you now an old friend, Volk Carter, celebrated commentator on world news, who comes to chat with you on the important subject of America's defense. Ladies and gentlemen, Volk Carter.
Hello, everyone. Volk Carter speaking. Well, Germany, Italy, and Japan have signed an agreement, as we know. The agreement specifies that should any nation not now engaged in the war enter the war in Europe, those three nations will come to the aid of each other. Well, it is obvious that the agreement was aimed chiefly at the United States. Now, why was it aimed at us? For no other reason than perhaps the policy of consistent and persistent meddling in European power politics that has been followed by the administration in Washington. But the day after the pact was announced, Assistant Secretary of State Sumner Welles, speaking in Cleveland, declared as follows, "The United States is ready," end quotation. Well, I don't believe that a more provocative nor untrue statement could possibly be made by an authority of our government. The statement, "We are ready," carries, after all, the implication of a challenge. To whom? About what? Who's declared that we are to be invaded? Who has fired on U.S. ships? And then the statement also implies that we are prepared for war. The plain truth of the matter is that we are not prepared to wage war, and we won't be prepared for at least 18 more months. Now, there are two committees at work in this country right now, among the thousands of organizations, and one is the William Allen White Committee, known perhaps better as the Committee to Defend America by Aiding the Allies, and the other is the America First Committee. The White Committee is the spearhead of the drive of the interventionists and the internationalists, and it operates on the principle that the United States should give everything away that it can, food, money, arms, planes, ships, munitions to Britain, so that Britain may keep the fight away from America. But the America First Committee, on the other hand, operates on the principle that we should give aid to Britain after and only after the United States has concentrated on building its own defenses first. And that's the committee for me. And why? Well, I would like to say that I flew with the Royal Air Force in 1918 in the first show. And I was a European until I became an American citizen. And I did so because I felt that in America and upon America's wisdom in doing two things in the future at that time, keeping out of foreign wars and at the same time making herself a tough, hard, well-armed nation, depended the hope of the Western civilization. But today, America, as I see it, based on my own experiences, is treading the same route to war as she did in 1917. But there is a subtle difference this time. In those days, 20 years ago, Americans first gave everything they had away to the Allies, just as we're doing now, but on the understanding that it was all necessary to save the world for democracy. Then they went to war themselves. Now they're being told that they must do the very same things all over again, but not this time to save the world for democracy. Oh, no. The propagandists for war are much too subtle. They've changed the platform. This time we must take the same road to war, not for democracy, but to defend America. And that is a subtle, oh, so subtle switch of ground. You tell the average American he ought to give away his navy and his bombers and his money and make him believe that he's doing so to defend his own country, and he'll do it and honestly believe he's doing the right thing. But only when he's been sold into war and dictatorship clamps down on his own country will he wake up to discover that he's been made a fool of twice in a quarter of a century. We don't have a two-ocean navy and won't have for approximately 5 years. The propagandists for war say we are threatened from Europe by Hitler, despite the contrary testimony of all the military experts in the United States, despite the fact that Hitler has been held up for 4 months by 22 miles of water in the English Channel, and despite the fact that even the British themselves were unable to land troops at Dakar on the coast of Africa. The United States fleet, however, is in the Pacific. Japan for 40 years has been asking to be friends with the United States. We, who developed and nurtured and raised the modern industrial Japan to her present position. Industrial and economic collaboration between the United States and Japan would have meant decline of the power of Britain's empire in the Far East, and none was more aware of that than London. And so with our own State Department, a virtual errand boy for the London Foreign Office, our policy in the Orient has been not one of American self-interest, but rather one which could be guaranteed to widen the break between the two greatest powers of the Pacific Ocean. And steadily, we have rebuffed Japanese suggestions that the U.S. and Japan work together to control the Pacific. Steadily, we have driven her into the arms of Hitler and his gang. But had we done otherwise, we would not now require a two-ocean navy. We would be able instead to pull our fleet from the Pacific to the Atlantic to stand guard. This is just one example of our persistent failure to adopt a fixed foreign policy which has for its one and only base American interests and American defense first, last, and always. And for our government to announce, well, we're ready, is a shocking, tragic deception of trusting people who are worried, puzzled, and bewildered by the pulling and the buffeting they are receiving at the hands of minorities seeking to drag them to war. By the middle of September, we took the following steps to defend ourselves. One, we acquired naval and air bases in the Atlantic. Two, appropriated more than $15 billion for defense equipment. Three, increased the RFC lending power to hand $500 million to keep South America in line. Four, handed 50 destroyers of the U.S. Navy to Britain. And the final step was taken by the President when he picked up the pieces of the foreign policy plank he destroyed in Chicago in his acceptance speech, nailed them all together again, and pledged this, quotations, "We will not participate in any foreign wars, and we will not send our army, naval, or air forces to fight in foreign lands outside the Americas in case of attack," end quotations. Add up all those measures, and they provide most all in the way of protective measures nervous Americans want in the way of protective insurance. From now on, then, it should be fairly easy to distinguish what further steps are for our own defense and what steps are purely for defense of Britain. Now, we're all sympathetic to Britain. That's natural, and it's perfectly obvious. We like their way of social living better than the German way of living. But most Americans don't wish their government to translate that sympathy into ruination of American defense by giving away to Britain 50% of not only what we have, but what we are making. And the White Committee, having gotten over the change in the neutrality law to permit the shipment of arms, having managed to put across to the most efficient propaganda machinery America's ever known, the destroyer deal, now announces in a confidential memorandum to its workers that they are to work on the people to support the giving away of 25 flying fortresses, even though we have only 59 in service. Give away at least 20 mosquito boats. Give away food on credit. Move to lift the Johnson Act, barring government loans, products of aeroplane factories. And even British pilots are now no longer pushing planes over the border into Canada. Even that pretense at neutrality has vanished. Ex-Imperial Airways pilots are flying U.S. ships direct from their California factories to Newfoundland, and thence to England in groups of 20 machines at a time, itself an act of war on the part of the U.S. government. And the U.S. government has a secret understanding with Britain to defend her Pacific possessions. And this was first denied by the State Department, exposed by the Japanese, and finally confirmed by the London Foreign Office August 21. But that is not defense of the United States. 3 weeks before the destroyer deal took place, Mr. Roosevelt denied that it was even being considered. But the William Allen White Committee revealed it would go through, and it did. In it, every two and three striper and even four stripers in the Navy, who cannot talk for fear of their own careers, will tell you privately that those ships could have been used admirably by the United States Navy for patrol duty ourselves for our national defense. Rifles and machine guns, artillery, all given away in great piles. John Balderston, Washington Observer for the White Committee, is authority for that statement. We haven't enough bombers in the Air Corps to match one day's losses as chalked up in the present European air war. But we are giving away 50% of what we make. For our island bases in the Atlantic, we got leases, not ownership titles. And yet the leasor has more than $9 billion in quick assets in the United States and still owes $4 billion from the last war. And we've driven Japan into the arms of Hitler by playing the London Foreign Office game in the Far East, where our total stake is less than the U.S. cigarette tax collection for 1 year. But Britain has more than $2 billion. How many citizens have ever stopped to wonder whether the dictators themselves aren't laughing uproariously, watching us give everything we have away? Suppose Japan, Germany, Italy, and Spain were, at a given signal, to put the squeeze play on the British Empire in all parts of the world, and suppose that squeeze brought Britain to her knees, where would we be, having stripped ourselves almost naked of defense? We'd be easy pickings. Of course, Americans want to make themselves strong, but they also want no muddling and meddling in other people's wars. A policy of eminent intelligence would be this, surely: to stop meddling in European power politics, keep our official mouths tight shut, devote our entire attention to arming ourselves to the teeth for a year or 18 months, and then and only then, and then only if necessary, tell the dictator crowd where to get off. For it is madness for Sumner Wells to babble, "We are ready," when all we've got is a pop gun from which we have already given away the pop. The America First Committee believes in a policy which is twofold: keeping out of war, desist in those policies which carry us inevitably along the road to war, and substitute instead policies which demand total concentration on making ourselves strong internally, not alone through armaments, but through respiration of the morale to the people at home themselves. Because we can maintain all the sympathy in the world for Britain, but let us first defend America. It's our country. Not by giving away everything we have, as the White Committee's wicked and insidious propaganda would have us do, but by keeping what we have until we have enough. Let us defend America first by drafting the service of men who will encourage us to work, to lead us back to fear God a little bit more than we have done of late, who will encourage us to understand that there is work to be done if industry is properly encouraged, and who will, by their wisdom and their inherent Americanism, as opposed to internationalism so prevalent in Washington today, encourage a confident, happier, more determined people, more determined to work, with a giant will to build a strong right arm and keep their freedoms and their right to pursue liberty, and give honest, earnest, ringing tones to the cry, "This is indeed God's country." And so be not deceived about aid short of war. You can't pull the trigger of a rifle and expect the bullet to stop at the muzzle. And by virtue of the insidious propaganda that we can only defend ourselves by aiding someone else short of war ourselves, we are traveling down the river to the Niagara Falls of war itself. And the whole of Europe is a tragic picture of nations which depended on other nations for their first line of defense. Don't forget that either. Poland, Czechoslovakia, Norway, Holland, Belgium, they all relied on other nations instead of themselves. And now they're gone. Gone with the wind. And yet, we're doing the exact same thing, and yet are too emotionally, perhaps unbalanced, to realize it. So let us wake up before it is too late and defend America first. Before trying to defend someone else, let's first be able to defend ourselves. I thank you.
Thank you, Bogarter. You've brought us a stirring message. Ladies and gentlemen, we must preserve this last great democracy, and you can do your part. Listen. Today, right now, write to your congressman or your senator. The post office in your locality will give you his name. Tell your senator, your congressman, to do all in his power to prevent America from intervening in somebody else's war. Tell them you want a strong, impregnable defense for America. Act now. And here is something else you can do. Write to the America First Committee, which is working tirelessly in your behalf to defend America first. Send your contribution. Anything from dimes to dollars will help. The address: America First Committee, Board of Trade Building, Chicago, Illinois. Let me repeat that address: America First Committee, Board of Trade Building, Chicago, Illinois. Remember, dimes or dollars will help. Seconds count. Write today.
Mountainside.